Welcome to Headlines. This is David Lichtenstein here in the Yeshiva Shalmaila, the virtual yeshiva. The name Yeshiva Shalmaila, I had the honor of the last two of the Shabbosim of his life, Reb Moshe Shapiro, here when he was in America, stayed by me. And he said that you should call it the Yeshiva Shalmaila. So I'm adopting that moniker. So this week, we have a very interesting program. We're going to be speaking about Nahal Haredi. Now, we have so many interviews, we're actually going to do it over 2 weeks. And we're going to hear from a Rabbi Lefkowitz, who's like the head of the Askanim. He's also a Satmara and a Briska. And he's going to produce a letter, which I hadn't been aware of, where Rav Steinman writes in the letter to Rav Dunsegel that the Nachal Haredi is only for Chayve Krisis, where it's boys who are totally OTD, the Mechal Shabbos, or eating treif, etc. But otherwise, he didn't support it. And we're going to have a lot of other guests who say otherwise. This week, we're going to have Yochanan Danziger, who's a Rav in the Nachal Haredi. Next week, we will have the founder and president of the Nachal Haredi, Tzvi Klebanoff, who will testify about many Bachrim who he sent who were not off the Derech. Last week, we had David Hager, who says that Rav Steinman used to send Bachrim who were not off the Derech. And then we will have the person who is most Makurav, one of the great Makuravim, the Rav Shiva of Yad Aaron, Rav Eichenstein, who will also talk about what Rav Steinman's attitude was. So it should be very interesting, this debate. Now, it seems we have a steer. We're going to have witnesses who say Rav Steinman sent boys who were not. And we're going to have those who say, we're going to put on our website a letter that was produced. It was written around 17 years ago, in which he says it's only for Chayvei Krisis. And so there's a stira here. And I'm sure my Olam will have many terutzim, but let me suggest certainly one possibility. And that possibility was by somebody, Rabbi Yitzhak Bar Chaim, who works at Nahal Haredi, who said that when Rav Steinman came out pro-Nahal Haredi, he said they put up Pashkevillim about him all over Yerushalayim and Bnei Brak, calling him really terrible things. In fact, I saw now, if you Google, you'll see that by his Ptira, they said that in various communities, etc., of the Baryanim, the real right wings, Rashi says, Baryanim is Anoshim Reikim, Pechazim Lamolchama. They said they were making L'chaims about his Ptira, so clearly he was seen as a supporter of Nachal Haredi. And he said he was intimidated, and he wrote, it's only for Chayvei Krisis, because there was a big Hafgana in Yerushalayim against him. I don't know if that's true. This is what the fellow from Nahal Haredi says. But really, in actuality, he sent many other Bachram, and he said he did it out of intimidation. That's one possibility. I don't know. If you have another Teretz, please let me know, because we really have a letter, and we're going to have witnesses the other way around. So, I'm not sure if a Chesimas Yodai has a din of Trey Utrey Neged Edim. We have a lot of Lumdim here. You'll decide that. Now, before we start, I would like to say a Vart on the Parsha. And this is a Vart, to me, it's a very powerful Vart. It's a life's Vart. In this week's Parsha, what happens? Yehuda encounters Yosef. And he tells him the whole story, what happened to his brother, etc. And Yosef is listening. And what happens at the end? He says, Ata Yeshiv no Avdecha Tachsar, take me instead of him. And it says Yosef couldn't help himself anymore. And what does it say? The Yomer Yosef Alechav Gishunu Elai, come to me. I want to tell you something. He says, Ani Yosef, I am Yosef. Asha Machartem Oisi Mitzrayim. You sold me to Mitzrayim. Right? And then he says it again. Al Yichar Beinechem Ki Machartem Oisi. Don't be upset that you sold me. And when they sold him, it says, what did Yehuda say? L'chuvenim k'renu l'yishma'elim. So how does he explain it? He says, don't be upset for selling me. Why? Ki l'mich yishlachani, because God sent me. Right? V'yishlacheni elokim l'fnechem. A second time, a third time. V'atem lo'yatem shalachtem ayisiyein heina ki elokim. Interesting. He changes it from mechira to shlichas. So I saw one of his Sfarim writes a beautiful Tyre. He says like this. He says, all of us often feel sold. Right? was sold. If I would have had a better opportunity, maybe I would have been in yeshiva. We could have been Rosh Yeshivas. Maybe your job is too hard. Maybe your father could have sent you to a better school. Maybe he could have given you money. Maybe the husband isn't the exact husband you wanted. Maybe the wife isn't the wife, right? Your job, your child. We were all sold down the river by somebody. A mother who didn't appreciate us, a father who was too rough, a teacher who said the wrong thing. Nobody respected me, right? Me. I'm like Rodney Dangerfield. Nobody respected me. I was sold down the river. If I had had a different opportunity, do you know what I would be today? Let's face it, we were sold. I know you were sold. You think you were sold, right? So what does Yosef say? You think you sold me? You didn't sell me. I'm a messenger. I'm a shliach. Lemichya shlachani elokim lefnechem. Vayishlacheni elokim. Loi atem shalachtem, I see. Right? Kiyam elokim. What's he saying? I wasn't sold. It's my mission. You know, I was speaking to a parent a few weeks ago, and he was telling me he works so hard, and on top of that, he has to take his son out all over for yeshivas. He has to make a trip to Israel. He's going to take him to visit 6 yeshivas. Ma mission upkommenisht. And I looked at the father and I said, wow, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for you to be like a father. What is a father's dream? To take his kids, to show them different yeshivas, different schools. That's what a dream. Like, what better way to nurture, to be a father, to show your child, show him the ropes, teach him, show him how to negotiate, how to deal, how to talk to, you know, mechanchim, menalim, bedrooms, dorm. This is, wow, what a great opportunity. The guy looked at me and he said, you know, it really is a great opportunity to be a father. What a fulfillment to be a father. You could have one mother's diapering the baby in the middle of the night or staying up with a crying child or doing homework and saying, what a headache I have. I worked so hard now. And another one says, I dreamed my whole life of this mission to be a mother. I remember when I was in yeshiva once, many years ago, so once one of the children of Reb Nachum, Mira Shiva, was being, you know, as children are, and Reb Nachum was like obviously aggravated. So somebody told him, Tsar Gidol Banim. So Reb Nachum looked at him and he said, that's not Tsar Gidol Banim, that's Gidol Banim. You never know from Tsar Gidol Banim. So what is Yosef telling them? He says, I wasn't sold. And you know, Halacha, Yosef is right. Shulchan Aruch, I think it's in Reish Hei, Chasam Mishpat says, we paskin tluv zavin, lavs videi zvidei, if there's no proper exchange. You can't force somebody. Every sale needs the acquiescence of both sides. Both sides have to countenance the sales. You need das kaina and you need das makna. If it's done forcefully, it's not, even though there's a Rambam in Kiddushin, he argues on the Baal Itter, it's an outlier of a Shita. The Ramad does bring it, I believe. But we hold halacha chayshabish, but you cannot force a sale. You cannot force somebody to buy. You cannot force the sale. He says, layatemacharta maisa, you can't sell me against my will. You know what my will was? My will was to be a shliach. My will was to do this willingly, to come out here, lahachyais, to feed the entire world. This was my... And you know something interesting? Just like mechira needs das, shlichus needs acquiescence. What's the halacha? The Gemara says in Kiddushin, beginning of Perek Beis, the Gemara says, ma'atem l'daitchem, af shluchachem l'daitchem. Shlichus means I have agreed to be a shliach. I have not agreed to be sold down the river. I have agreed to be a shliach. And you know what the halacha is a shluchas? Shluchai shaladim kemaisai. Right, a shliach acts for that person. He becomes that person. So he says, ki lemichya shlachani elokim lefneichem. If a person sees that their job is when they're taking their child to a yeshiva, when you're taking the baby, you're feeding the baby at night, when you're preparing supper for your children even though you're tired, when you're getting up for morning for breakfast when your children, and you're doing it because I am a shlichas, this was my mission, and shluchai shaladim kemaisai. So if you're doing God's work, whose messenger, whose kemaisai are you at that moment? You are standing in the shoes of Kaviyachal, of God, of the Rabbi Nishalaylam. So look how Yosef takes the worst trauma possible, being sold by his brothers, right? And what does he turn it into? He becomes a god. He becomes Shluchay Shaloisei Kemaisei Shaladim Kemaisei. He says Lemichya Shlachani Yalekim Lefnechem. And I think that's it's an incredibly empowering message. And when we go to learn, or we go to work, and we're tired, and we don't want to be where we are, and often it takes us to faraway places and long hours and different times, you could say Lemichya Shlachani. I am a shliach here, and at this point in time, I am doing God's work. Let me share with you a beautiful story. If I said it before, excuse me, but it's such a powerful story. You know, there was a Jew in Posen, where Rabbi Akiva Eiger lived. He was a tremendous masmid. So he never went to a wedding. He never went to a bar mitzvah. He never went. He used to learn. One time, Rabbi Akiva Eiger said, "I can't go to a certain wedding. It's somebody who needs a, you know, the community should, I should be there. I want you to be my be there." And this person came before the smorgasbord. He was the first one there. And he stayed for the smorgasbord, for the chuppah. He didn't run out right after the chuppah. He stayed for the dancing, for the first dance, for the second dance. He stayed till the end of the mitzvah tanz, even though I doubt that in Germany they had a mitzvah tanz. He was the last person out. And somebody said, "My holy yidola, my masmid, what are you doing here through this 6 hours you're here?" And he looked at him and he said, "At this wedding, Rabbi Akiva Eiger sent me. And Shluchay Shaladim Kemaisei, I am Rabbi Akiva Eiger. I'm not giving up 1 second of this." So what do we say if we take Yosef's attitude and we say, "Lemichya Shlachani Aleikim Lefnechem. For Yishlachani Aleikim, I went to work." Why? Because I was told a father's job is achroi for his family, is achroi for his children. He wants to put them through yeshiva. He wants to marry off l'shadei chabanais. He wants to be able to give tzedakah. He says, "Lemichya Shlachani." At that point in time, do it with the greatest of love. If you do it as a shlichas at that moment, you're not Rabbi Akiva Eiger, you're kaviyachol shliach. Imagine the power of that. This is the message of Yosef, and this shows us how Yosef, in the most incredibly adverse situations, sold the Midyanim to the Mitzrim, to Potiphar, in every situation. He smiled no matter what you threw at him. How could he not smile if he was Rabbi Akiva Eiger at that moment? If he was a Shluchay Shalmakim, Shluchay Drachmana at that moment. This should be a chizuk for all of us as we work through our long, grueling days, taking care of our beautiful parents, children, friends, etc. Let's go to our wonderful guests. We have on the phone with us, from Yerushalayim, Rabbi Yochanan Danziger, who's one of the Rabbanim of Nahal Haredi. He's an alumni of Beis Medrash Gevaya in Lakewood. I believe he learned there for many years. He lived and learned in Lakewood for many years. Welcome, Rabbi Danziger.
Thank you very much for having me.
So, Rabbi Danziger, you're one of the Rabbanim of Nahal Haredi. And we hear, like, conflicting reports. We hear Nahal Haredi is getting really good guys who come to davening 3 times a day, and they're, you know, and they're frum, etc. And then from the other side, we have... We've had people who say it's full of shababniks, it's drug users and ladygayers and people who aren't doing anything, and it's getting the worst of the bachrim, and it's a black eye to Klal Yisrael. Give us a little bit of, before we get into hashkafa, just what is the metzias? What is actually happening there?
So the reality is that there is a mix of boys, as there is in most environments. And we have boys who come from stronger environments, boys that come from weaker environments. But all in all, they come from Haredi backgrounds. And the stronger boys are looking for a way to develop themselves for the future, either by working or through education, which is really only achievable by going to the army. And there are boys who are less strong who are really looking to do army service within an environment, a framework that is familiar to them, which is the Haredi environment. And the Nachal Haredi, Netzach Yehuda Battalion, it's really called both, provides that kind of framework. So are there boys who are weaker? Definitely. Are there boys who are stronger? Definitely. Are most boys somewhere in between? That is also true. And one thing I can say is that at the end of the service, all the boys who come out in a more dedicated, devoted, responsible, stronger way, better sense of Hashem. It may not always translate into the proper Shmiras HaMitzvos that we are accustomed to, but you will find that the boys have a more of a commitment to their Judaism in general.
Well, talk about basics, Shmira, Shabbos, Tefillah. I mean, how do they look like? If somebody were to come, what would he see?
Well, if somebody were to come to the, let's talk about the training base. They are obligated to attend Tefillah three times a day. There's no option to stay out. Now, while they're in the shul, is somebody going to force any specific soldier to concentrate on his davening or even to answer Yehei Shmei Rava? Absolutely not. Nobody's going to force them to do that. But a soldier who's sitting there and does not want to participate in davening, for example, ends up cleaning the latrines because it is a religious environment, and one of the rules for coming into Nachal Charedi is that you must daven three times a day. Just to give you an example, other rules. The battalion is based on a concept of there are certain fundamental rules that must be followed. Shmira Shabbos, you cannot be Mechala Shabbos in the battalion. That's not allowed. Somebody who is Mechala Shabbos and is caught doing that will be thrown out of the battalion. Does that mean that nobody does it? I'm sure there are people that do it. Do they always get caught? They don't always get caught. But that is the rule of the battalion. And by the way, that's from the army. That's not, you know, the rules that some rabbis made. That is an army agreement that they must daven three times a day. They must keep Shabbos on base. They must wear a yarmulke on base. And they cannot view things that are inappropriate on their phones or computers, and nor may they use inappropriate language. Those are the five basic rules. And if they don't keep that, the commander has a right to throw them out.
And what's the kashrus like in Netzach Yehuda?
Right. So the kashrus is a very high level. It's something that any Haredi person would eat from. In fact, when we go to visit the Chayalim on the base, we actually eat that food as well. So it's whatever the strongest hechsher is at the time. The only people who would have an issue with the kashrus there, with the shechita, are Chabadnikim, who are only sobek on their own shechita. So for them, we don't provide special Chabad shechita, but for everybody else, it's the highest hashgacha.
Okay, and when the boys come out, you say for the most part they come out like stronger in Torah mitzvahs?
Well, I said with a stronger commitment to their Judaism, to Yahadut. Now, what does that translate into? For some, it means that they go back to yeshiva, and we have many boys that go back to yeshiva after the army. For others, it means that they are more committed to a frum type of lifestyle, usually, I can't say usually, but often not a Haredi type of lifestyle, but a frum lifestyle with Shmir Shabbos and Taras HaMishpacha and all those things that are extremely important. We have boys who come out and are not frum at all. And that would have happened no matter which environment they would have been in. Had they left yeshiva and gone to work, it may have been exactly the same way. But I say that most of them are stronger because even the boys who are coming out and, let's say, have decided not to be Shomer Mitzvahs the way we understand a person should, the way Shulchan Aruch demands, nevertheless, they have typically a deeper commitment to their own type of Avodas Hashem, a connection to Hashem, and a connection to, they want to build families that are frum, or frum-like. They don't want a chiloni lifestyle. Many boys who come out, we find that the ones who are less frum, after a year or so after they get out of the army, they get married and they build very frum homes. So I would say for the most part, most of the boys that come out end up frummer than when they went in.
And what percentage would you say are frum?
Are frum when they come in?
Frum when they come in or frum when they go out? Pick a time. When they go out, what percentage?
I would say it's probably somewhere around 75%, let's say, when they come in, are really committed to Torah and Mitzvot, which means that they will, let's say, they not only agree to do what needs to be done or what's expected of them, but they actually believe it and will do it when they're off base as well. I'd say 25% will do it while they're on base, but will not be Shomer Mitzvot the way we would expect when they're off base. And I'd say it's probably around that same percentage when they come out.
Okay.
But with the caveat that those 25% when they come out who are the weaker ones, they will have a stronger sense of identity with Frumkeit and with Yahadut in general.
Now, there seems to be some controversy whether Rav Steinman was a backer of Nachal Charedi or not. Do you have any experience with that?
I do. Rav Steinman, Zichrono Livracha, was asked before the founding of Nachal Charedi. I know the person who asked him, and he was asked to lend support to Nachal Charedi. In other words, the problem was presented to him that there are boys who were dropping out of yeshiva and stovavim, you know, walking around in the streets with nothing to do, losing their Yiddishkeit and their identity with Yiddishkeit, and whether it was okay to put them into the army. And Rav Steinman had agreed to allow them to go into the army with the proviso that there be certain, what we call Nahalei Netzach, which are the rules for the Netzach battalion, with the Nahalei Netzach being in place. And it was then negotiated with the Department of Defense, and they agreed to help in building such a battalion. So to the best of my knowledge, after speaking to people who were the ones who actually built the battalion, the Rabbanim who built the battalion, they have told me in a direct way that Rav Steinman did lend his support to Nachal Charedi.
Now, there's a letter that is being distributed from Rav Steinman, dated, I think it's Tufshin, I should get the date on that, but it's around 19 years ago, where he writes to Rav Don Segel that the purpose of Nachal Charedi is for boys who are over on Chayvei Krisis Bolvad. Are you aware of such a letter? Have you seen it?
No, I've not seen such a letter. I'm not aware of such a letter, nor am I aware of the context of that letter. There were many things claimed about what Rav Steinman held, or whether he changed his mind or did not change his mind. I'm just telling you what the Rabbanim, who established the battalion, have told me.
Do you understand the... there's no other word to say it except the absolute hatred of some people in the Haredi community towards Nachal Haredi. Can you understand it? Can you try to explain that position?
So one of the shitos that we have here is not to get involved in politics. We don't get involved in the actual drafting of soldiers. We don't try to convince boys who are in yeshiva to go to the army, and we don't really involve ourselves in the kinds of politics that go on, either pro or against. That having been said, it is obviously perceived as some kind of threat to the Haredi community that there are boys who would step out of that role of making Torasam Umanusam and and also to participate in something which is perceived, the army, as part of the general Israeli culture. You know, I understand where they're coming from. I don't understand the level of outrage, But given what it is that they are trying to accomplish for their people, I understand why they might perceive this as a threat.
Now, Rabbi Danziger, you are not Israeli, clearly from your accent. You know, you're born and bred in New York. You're a Lakewood Talmud. You moved to Eretz Yisrael. What would inspire you to become a Rav in Nachal Haredi? And I'm assuming it's not for the money, unless maybe it is. Is it a very high-paying position? What inspired you? Like, tell us your passion for this.
My passion is a sense of bridging the various populations in Eretz Yisrael. If you want to live in Eretz Yisrael, you have to become part of what goes on here. I want to have hashpa, influence on people who have yet to become observant or recognizing Hashem and Torah and mitzvahs. And you can't walk around with your head in the sand, acting as if, you know, it's us against them and live in a divided country. That's not something that I see as a place that I want to be in or where Am Yisrael can be. I think that if we want to see the continual unfolding of Hashem's kindness in giving us back Eretz Yisrael and allowing us to build it in the most fantastic way that we are doing it now, even given all its problems and issues, if we want that to happen, then it has to be with a sense of connection to the larger society and a bridging the gaps that stand between the different segments of society. In addition, there is a mitzvah to defend Am Yisrael, and especially not only Jews living anywhere, but L'Samo Adam Re'echo is also a mitzvah to defend the land. We all know that on Shabbos, even Al Kash V'Tevin, you're allowed to go to war to send the to defend the borders on Shabbos. So it's very, very important to be in a position to defend the land. Who do I want defending the land? I want Dafka people who are not religious, who are not committed to Torah, who are not committed to Hashem and to the furthering of the development of Hashem's kindness in Eretz Yisrael. That's not who I specifically want. I want to see people who are committed to Torah and mitzvot, and that's why I decided to get involved, to help motivate frum boys or boys who can be frumer to be able to make their contribution, that the other segments of society will look at them and say, look, this is a kiddush shem shemayim, these are b'nei Torah, these are people who are shomer Torah mitzvot, and afal pi kein, nevertheless, they go and they fight for Am Yisrael, to defend Am Yisrael, to protect all Jews. And I want to be part of that.
And does it make a Kiddush Hashem?
It definitely makes a Kiddush Hashem. I can tell you that when we have Shabbos meals and where we invite lots of people, often we have soldiers from all walks of life, and many of them are not committed to Torah and mitzvot. I often have boys who have been in Nachal Haredi or who are currently in Nachal Haredi at the table, and it makes an incredibly positive impression on those who are not religious and sitting at the table, whether it's just plain citizens or whether it's soldiers. They are very, very positively impressed by the fact that the boys are in Nachal Haredi, and Gedud 97, as it's called, Battalion 97, has won incredible awards across the board from the Ministry of Defense, from all different kinds of places, for their professionalism and their abilities to tackle great, great challenges in very, very difficult areas. So they've made a name for themselves, and they are known. And when people hear that, oh, you were in Battalion 97, they're very, very impressed.
Now, what would you respond to, let's say, the Satmar faction, or the Tori Karta faction, or the Eidach Redis faction, that says that we would be better off, or as well off, if Eretz Yisrael was, you know, protected by the UN, and it was, but actually, you know, an Arab country under Arab auspices, protected by the UN. They're afraid of the Gimel Shuas. They said, we would have this Eretz Yisrael under the UN and under an Arab country with the UN policing. How would you respond to that? Not that I know that that's an area of expertise for Rav and Nachal Haredi, but I'm just curious. You've seen a lot more tanks than all of us. So how would you respond?
Well, it's very, very obvious to me what the Arabs would do if Chas v'Chalila, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them the opportunity to do what they do best. I remember being in a demonstration once. I wasn't actually in a demonstration. I was walking by. I went to see it in Kikar Paris in Yerushalayim. That's right by Rehavia. And there was some leftists demonstrating there on the part of, the cruel IDF or something along those lines. It was a Matzah Shabbos. And I was just looking at them. And a man came along and he just grabbed me by the arm and started pulling me down the street. It was a frum person. And he said to me, you know who those people are? Those people are people who hate the Jewish people, and they know nothing about the people that they are talking about, the Arabs. Why? He said, I grew up in Morocco, wherever it was, I'm not sure where it was. And he said, a Jew couldn't walk on the same street as a Muslim. If a Jew touched fruit in the market, a Muslim would not buy those fruit. And how many times we were threatened with pogroms and how many people were hurt. And he said, these people only knew. He said, they're Ashkenazim. They don't know really what the Arabs are like. And that's why they go demonstrate the way they do. So Chas v'Chalila, if these people had their chance to do what they would do, we don't want to think about what would happen. And who stands in the way of what they do? It's only the army that stands in the way of what they do.
And
I say only
say?
The army.
What
I say only the army.
Who say
so
the UN would do the same
would
thing?
Be, yeah, kol kibiyotin yadi, right? Also lisa chayel azeh. And the answer is the motto of our battalion, which is ki hu anosin l'cho koach la'asos choyel, which is the next pasuk, which is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has granted us in His infinite kindness the power to be able to defend ourselves. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, after 6 million Jews perished, HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided that it's time for the Jews to be able to defend themselves, and He gives us that ability to do it. What should we do? We should say to Hashem, we don't want your gifts, keep your gifts for yourself. Chas v'Chalila. We are obligated to use all the power that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us to defend Am Yisrael. That would be my response.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Danziger. It was an honor to have you on with us.
Okay, thank you, David.
We have on the phone with us from Muncie, New York, Rav Chaim Lefkowitz, who is a Talmud of Satmar in Williamsburg, a Talmud of Reb David Soloveitchik in Brisk. He's one of the leading activists, maybe the leading activist in America, against the Gius B'nei HaYeshivas. He's closely connected to the Askanim in Eretz Yisrael. Welcome, Rabbi Lefkowitz.
Welcome, Reb David.
So before we start, I want to share with you a chiddush that I had this morning by davening that I thought it's, and I say it's Var Toivo. Somebody came over to me and he said, you know, he runs a big business and he employs a lot of people. And there's so much in the news today about harassment of women. He said he's afraid to open his mouth anymore. What could he say that could be misconstrued? So I told him, and I, Rabbi Abraham says on the when he teaches V'harivnu Hashem Elokeinu Estivrei Sarascha Befinu, he has a different shot. V'harivna means make sweet, and he says it's Miloshin Aroiv Avdecha L'toiv, that the Rabbeinu Shalom, the Torah should be a custodian, should be a shield, should be a protector. I said, if you're a yeshiva man, you're a ben Torah, you're a chassid, you're an erlich yid, a nivel peh should never come out of your mouth. Nisht in any company. If you grew up, if the Torah was nichnas into your bones, you should never be saying the wrong thing to a woman. It can't be. I said that's what we say. V'harav na Hashem alekenu es divrei saras rabbeinu. If the Torah gate that ain't in the baina, it becomes an arvus. You won't have to worry about it because it's your second nature. I said maybe according to Rabbi Abraham, we have a solution to anybody who's worried about harassment in the current workforce. What do you think of my Torah, Rabbi Lefkowitz?
I think of your Torah like this. The Chachamim will say that Shem Shemayim Yimizav al Yotzfu. And the Gemara says in Sechtas Brochas that I'm thinking of Yerichanan that Meyomav lo yehigdimoy nochi b'shik, and to say
Shalom, yeah.
Well, to say Shalom. And of course, this is the thin line. How do you deal with women in a percheret digitoyer way and simultaneously uphold the laws of Syria, Chalavafram? And this is where you have the Mesodis Ovis. Everybody sees by their fathers and rabbis how they do it in a way that Shivish Shem Shemayim. Skadu Shal Yadchu. It should be Vaharavnu. The Torah should be Aziz HaTorah, of course.
Okay. So let's go to our topic. We're talking about Nachal Haredi. We had on, or we will have on, one of the founders of the Nachal Haredi. And he says that it's the best yeshiva in the world. He says, if you don't go, it's the only yeshiva where if you don't go to Daven with the minyan three times a day, they could throw you in jail. I mean, they mean business over there. He says a woman is not allowed onto the base. He says his own wife, with a sheitel, and there's no women allowed on the base. He said, it's so frum, he said, that the army generals say that it's a Kirov movement. So they're taking boys who don't want to be in yeshiva, and they're putting them into basically where they daven, they protect the country. And he says that that is the mission of Nachal Haredi. And I was curious. I know that there's a lot of antagonism. There's a lot of antithesis to the Nachal Haredi. And I was curious if we could hear somebody represent the other or present the other side of the argument here.
Okay, before answering and trying to get into that part of your argument, which, as you know, I've been on your line before, that I grew up in Satmar, and I had a Haredis and in Kirkartiv views. So when you discuss Nachal Haredi, from my point of view, and from the Rabbanim and Rebbes from this generation and previous where I grew up, it doesn't come into consideration at all. The phenomenon of Nachal, of a Haredi battalion in the Israeli army, it's like saying a chazit that has been salted, or it's not Basar B'cholov, because the actual essence of the military on its own, the Haredi, is irrelevant. But I would like to address the issue. But before addressing the issue, you said that you are related to the person who founded Nachal Haredi.
No, I'm not related. We invited him as a guest.
That was a typo. Okay, but I'm wondering if you have spoken to him. Does he or anybody involved in setting up Nachal Haredi, which is something, a new phenomenon in Klal Yisrael, do they have backing of any Rabbanim, any Rosh Yeshiva, any Rebbe?
Yeah, so he said the main backing they had was from Rav Steinman, Zecheinu Levracha. He said Rav Steinman was very for it, and he told many boys who were struggling in yeshiva, who didn't want to be in learning, who were, you know, just on the verge of becoming shababnikis, to go there. And he said, and he had startling outcomes when these boys who were just, you know, when somebody's in yeshiva, you have boys, they have no geschmack in learning. They could have learning disabilities. They could be dyslexic. They just don't have, you know, can zitzfleisch. So what happens when you're unhappy in your environment? You start wandering. It's like Rashi says, "V'haboy reik ein bei mayim." Rashi says, "Mayim bein voy avol nachashim ba'kravim yeshboy." If somebody has spare time, if there's no mayim, it's full with nachashim ba'kravim. There's no middle ground. So you had all these boys. He said, in the Nachal Haredi, they get a mission. They're protecting Eretz Yisrael. They have davening. They have learning. They make siyum mesechtis over there. He says, don't let it be full of nachashim ba'kravim for these boys. I'm paraphrasing. He didn't use this mashal. Send them to where they can be. They could serve a real mission. So he said Rav Steinman was the backer.
So in other words, what you're saying, that he is saying, that Nachal Haredi has been designed for boys who don't have this flesh, so to say, to sit and learn. So instead of roaming the streets, they should have a Haredi environment and admission in the military. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
And he's saying that Rav Steinemann was backing this, correct?
Correct, yeah.
Okay, in front of me, I have here an article that has been posted on a known website called Kikar HaShabbat, Kovzayim B'Kislev. The writer of the article is a guy by the name Yisrael Cohen, and he's quoting Rabbi Sternbuch, which is known as the Ravat of Eidah Afraidis.
He's been on the program that, many times. Yeah.
Yes, and he's quoting him. It's in Lashon Kodesh, but I believe he said it in Yiddish. And he says, Hashvian is Bakesh Yeshiva Shalmala, and he's referring to Rav Steinemann. And he's saying, Litzari Yeshna Machrivim Kalai Das Hamaharsim Bekerim Hashem Lahaisis Charaitim Lihizayis
Lutzopo. Rabbi Lefkowitz, most of our, many of our listeners won't understand you, so translate, okay?
Okay, I'll translate it, okay. So what is, but don't hold me up responsible to be exact, quote unquote, I'll try my best. He says like this, unfortunately, there are heretics, Maharsim, who entice Haredim to the military, and they say they're hanging their coat on the hook of Rav Steinemann, and I got a letter from him that this is Sheker, and whoever says that he's the one who initiated Anachol Haredi is an Avon in Bal Yechiper, and he also quotes that he wrote as such, to Reb Dan Segal. So in this article, I have the letter that Rav Steinemann wrote to Reb Dan Segal, and it wrote as follows, quote, since there is there's going on rumors in the street, unstoppable rumors, though I am the one who is supporting Nachal Haredi, that Bachurim Chalushim, meaning weak boys in Limud HaTorah and Yiras Shamayim, it's good for them to be there. This is something that not to be anticipated at all. The only discussion has been that boys Mechalal Shabbos have a crisis, and father wants to rescue him and rescue the street. They should not be a danger for society. And they are unstoppable. This is what the discussion was all about. Aval vada is a ova in lo yechiper im shemaitis a mishtadl ba'ayza tira shihi l'mish aina machala shabbos l'imot zesham. Whoever takes part to get a boy into the military, if he's not a machala shabbos, he's only weak and limited Torah, it's a sin, an unforgivable sin. And he goes on and on. And he signs his name.
Who signs his name?
Rav Steinemann. This is the letter to Dan Segal, which Rav Sternbuch quoted this week in public. And in that article, there is another letter dated Chodesh Sivan Tufshin Samach Aleph by. Hold on. By Reb Yitzchak Levinstein, who was like very, very close to Rav Steinemann, and this letter is to Reb Chaim Moshe Sternbuch, which is the son of Rav Sternbuch, and he's referring to a letter that he received from Rav Sternbuch's son asking on the issue of Nachal Haredi, as though his question was, is it true? He was trying to refer, is it true that Rav Steinemann is the one who is behind Nachal Haredi, and he says there is so much Pashkevillim going on. And it's a very long letter, but I'll just quote, which is important for this conversation. And it says like this, quote, the whole phenomena of Nachal Haredi has been established by people shelo yehoyu lehem kol kesher im rabbayni. Va'ad hayoyim lehem kol kesher. The people who designed Nachal Haredi have no relationship to Rav Steinemann, and up until today, they are not related. They don't even come back to him.
So Rabbi Lefkowitz, let me respond to that, okay? I'm just Googled it now. In today's news, you have a general Dov Devani, who founded the Givati Brevet, his experience, he came into Rav Steinman, and Rav Steinman was very excited. I'll read you the quote. He told him all about it. This is how it began. He says he was with a bunch of people. Rav Steinman, okay, one second. I was not prepared. The Gabbai said to him, Yehuda, you do not understand. You received a blessing for the establishment of... David Hager says he was by him many times with Bachrim. It's like, so wait, you know what, let me... We've established that you're saying that Rav Steinman did not hold the Nachal Haredi, okay?
I'm just saying what Rav Steinman himself wrote.
What I would ask you to do is if you could just forward us the letter, and then we'll go back to, you know, it's sort of, I wasn't expecting the conversation to go this way because it's sort of universally accepted that he was very pro-Nachal Haredi. In fact, that he's stones were thrown at his house and Pashkevillim were hung up. Why would they hang up Pashkevillim about him if he was against it? So, but if we want to, you know, it's always, look, there's always a question of revisionist history, who's right. I accept the fact that you say it's not true. I will investigate it. We will do another week on this. So let's, for the purposes of this conversation, agree that, let's say Rav Steinman did not found it, okay? Just for the purposes, so that we can continue the conversation, okay?
Okay. So
we will try to get, we'll have eyewitnesses who say otherwise, but let's assume you have a letter. And look, if he signed such a letter, it's certainly very interesting. Let's examine. Let's assume he did not found it. Talk about your opposition to Nachal Haredi, not without Rav Steinman's involvement.
Okay. So if we take out Rav Steinman from the equation,
right.
then I believe then we take out anybody out of the equation, because as far as we know and as far as even you know, and whoever quotes Rav Steinman, there is no other Rosh Yeshiva, Rebbe, or Tzaddik, or Mashpia in this generation that anybody knows of that officially supports Nachal Haredi, except of the rumor that Rav Steinman is behind it. And I'm not saying one way or the other if he was behind or not
okay,
behind. I'm just quoting it. So then
there's nobody behind it. That's your point.
Okay. If nobody's behind it, so first of all, even before discussing any topic that belongs to Claudius Yisrael in general, I'm not a good ladot, and I'm just an activist, and this is definitely a phenomena, a concept that needs tremendous, tremendous das toir of the daily Yisrael to look into it, and it's not up for pushing the Eden like us to go into it. But if you want to get the takeaway of me as a pushing the Eden, I would say as follows. I believe that Klal Yisrael today, in general, is divided in three factions. I'm talking about people who call themselves Haredim, Shomrei Torah, and in terms of the union of the Tzava, the military, Israel, the state, Zionism. So there are two extremes. And one extreme is the anti-Zionist, the vocal anti-Zionist, which is Satmer, Haida Haides, Tirakarta, followers of Yeshiva Yashan. Now, these people, as I said before, there's nothing more to talk about. There's no such thing as a Nachal Haredi. There's no Haredi because even if you have Shemiras HaTorah V'Mitzvah, the essence of the Israeli military is against the Yid Gimel Ikrim. There's no such thing as a Nachal Haredi. Now, in the other end of the spectrum, there's the pro-Zionist, the Mizrahi, Merkez Arav, Modern Orthodox, who see in the state as a mitzvah, Yeshiva Yisrael, Schalta Degela, bringing Mashiach, the way to Mashiach. Now, for these people, you don't need Nachal Haredi. They never looked for Nachal Haredi. There are quotes of Rav Kook that he's saying that the Chalutzim, even the Mechala L'Shabbos, doing a gewaldige zach for the actual union of Zionism in the state. So the only remaining question for Nachal Haredi is a big portion of Klal Yisrael who are in between. They are not vocal pro-Zionists, and they are not vocal anti-Zionists, which is the regular day-to-day Rav Ribbe from Klal Yisrael, the Yeshivish world or the Hasidish world. Now, in terms of if he's a yeshiva boy, this wasn't even your question, because you only question if he does not belong to yeshiva, just to give him some sort of environment. It should not be a goal of the derech, and some sort of, how shall I say, to be civilized in the terms of the military. Now, first of all, just going into particular about Nachal Haredi itself, the way it's structured, there is no such thing as a Nachal Haredi today, even in the terms of the people who quote their Haredi. First of all, the essence of the military as a military has been designed as such, and I would like to quote the words of Ben Gurion, who was the founding father of Zionism. He says like this, as follows, quote, I'll say it in English. For the IDF, there is the responsibility not only for the security of the state, as any other military force in other governments and states. It is for the purpose to be a melting pot for all the Goliot, the exiles, who are being gathered in their Moledet, in their homeland from across the globe. It's a Bais Yotzer, it's a factory to melt up a nation. In their Mashiachistic, messianic envision. And the Tzahal is prepared to bring up a generation of Chalutzim, Boinai Meledet, people who would build the homeland. Our security cannot happen unless we are all melted together.
Rabbi Lefkowitz, I just want to get. So your first point is that it's a melting pot. And I think that there's a fear way to separate and say, you know, when somebody's going to the Tzahal where there's boys and there's girls and there's Russians and French and Canadians and Israelis and Sfardim, Ashkenazim, Freya from, it's clearly a melting pot. When somebody's going to a separate place where it doesn't allow women on the base, Rabbi Hager says is that the head of all, the head of military personnel for the whole country is a woman. When she came to the base, she wouldn't walk onto the base. A brigadier general, he said his own wife walked. He said they have to daven three times a day or they get locked up. He said that you have every day a siyum ha-masechta over there. I would make the position that you could say a chilek that this is not a melting pot. I mean, it seems very, just let's talk of just rationally. It seems, now your second, so I'm just trying to say how he would respond, because he's not here. And the other point is, you say that Shabbos has no time for Shabbos. I don't know. Have you ever been on the base? I don't know.
No.
So, Rabbi Lefkowitz, would you, if he were invited to go and see if it's true, would you go?
David, first of all, if I were invited, I wouldn't step a foot step a foot, because the way I've been brought up,
but the consensus of all the
that the Tzahal is a mokum of meanness because of the idea of the Tzahal. But I'm blessed.
Let me just go back.
I'm talking in general for people that coming from a different walk of life. I'm just stating the fact that Nachal Haredi today is not Haredi. It's just a sugar coating.
The only question remains,
how about if there is a possibility to make it through Haredi, you make a mitzvah over there and they'll put on Rabbi Netam Tvil, and everything is going to be betachlis akashis v'hadikdik possible, yeah. Which I don't believe this is even the materials to happen, but let's assume that there is a possibility. Then there's the second argument that the essence, the spirit of the IDF, although it's not a melting pot in Shmiras HaTorah v'Mitzvahs, when Ben-Gurion said that the Tzahal should be a melting pot, he did not mean that people should stop putting on film. This is not the definition. His definition was of a melting pot that the people should walk in as a Yehudi and walk out as a Yisraeli, with a national identity, being that Yom HaTzma'ut is a Chag HaMoladet. The flag is our flag. The national anthem is our nationality. And if you take this out of the Tzahal, there is no Tzahal at all.
But Rabbi Lefkowitz, Panevish Yeshiva has an Israeli flag on Yom HaTzma'ut. I mean, if your position is that Nachal Haredi is bad because you're anti-Zionist, I can accept that. I accept that you have a right to be anti-Zionist, but that's not a particular attack on Nachal Haredi. Nachal, if you're anti-Zionist, I don't think you should be living in Israel at all. I mean, I think it's questionable. If somebody's really anti-Zionist, they say, look, I don't want to take the electricity, I don't want to take the roads, I don't want to take the medical services, I don't want to, all these people. So I think if you're anti-Zionist, it's a wonderful thing. You shouldn't visit Eretz Yisrael. You shouldn't go to Eretz Yisrael. You shouldn't learn in Brisk. Right? There shouldn't be a big Satma contingency in Eretz Yisrael. I think a person, that would be the right way to do it. And somebody says, look, I have that opinion. I could say, Bavakasha, you have a right to your Shita. There's nothing necessarily negative, Torah, about having such a Shita. But that is not an attack on Nachal Haredi per se. You're saying, I am against Eretz Yisrael, and I could accept that position. But if somebody does believe that there is living in Eretz Yisrael, that there is a mitzvah of Yishuv, that there is a reason that Klal Yisrael should have a protection, that Eretz Yisrael is a good thing for Klal Yisrael today. The question is, in such a situation, is Nachal Haredi good or bad?
Okay, I think you're taking it to the other extreme, and if you want to touch on that topic, how about living in Eretz Yisrael and going to Brisk, and being how can you be in the Tirikart and suffer in Eretz Yisrael? This is a discussion on its own. And now when you say that the Panovich Yeshiva is raising the flag and Yom Ha'atzmaut, I believe so. I've never been in Panovich. I don't know what it is, but I believe it's just superficial. It's just a way of Hanifa for the money they're getting. But I don't believe that any boy in Panovich identifies himself as Yom HaTzmaut, is any holiday or any special day or anything at all with a national anthem or with a flag. It's just that the leadership of Panovich, because of the funds that they receive, they believe it's fit to put up a flag. But going to the IDF, being part of it, it's not superficial. This is what it is. This is what nationalism and Zionism is all about. Now, IDF, in whichever shape or form, is the symbol of the nationalistic movement of Zionism. It could be sugar coated to put up a kapata, a shtreimel, a spadik, a frak, a kailas. It's irrelevant. But
so, Rabbi Lefkowitz, let me ask you a question. Before the war, the Aguda and many of the Haredi, much of the Haredi, certainly in Hungary, were virulently anti-Zionist. And when, let's say, Jabotinsky came to Europe before the war, and he said, leave the Gullus or the Gullus will destroy you, they threw him out of Brisk, they threw him out of all these places, right? World War II came. And he was right. I mean, leave the Gullus or the Gullus will liquidate you. That was his lesson. Look, Rabbi Elchanan himself died in the sixth fort, I think it was called. He was killed, right? As did most of the Yiddishkeit of Litta, 99% of the Yiddishkeit in Litta, 70, so probably 85% of the Yiddishkeit in Poland. And which is why post-war, the Aguda is not anti. It works with the Medina. Do you think, looking back historically, that maybe Jabotinsky was right when he said liquidate the Gullus or the Gullus will liquidate you, and maybe a few million more Jews could have been saved had they gone up to Eretz Yisrael?
Chaz v'sholom, the Torah is Nitzchias, is Oysa Torah l'Ishaim v'chalefet, v'loysa hai Torah cheres ma'isa boiru is Baruch Shemoy. And when Rabbi Chana Vassana said something, he was Torah, he was a Talmud of his prophet time, and he said what is Torah? Now, to say that it turned out that Jabotinsky was right, and at the end of the war, God forbid, Rabbi Chanan Wasserman would agree to him because of the war, it's just stupid as stupid can be. And it's Maharach Adivar Chachomim even to say such a quote. Rabbi Chanan Wasserman was yelling while Europe was already burning. With the fire, the ovens have been put on, and he's saying this is what's happening. And why it's happening. In other words, what he was saying is, Klal Yisrael, do tshuva and don't go after the nationalistic movement. Now you're saying that after the war, the Agida joined Zionism with Sheket. None of the Gedolei Agida, none of them, which I know of, maybe there is some hidden quote, who even said to go to the votes or whatever, said any pro-nationalistic, pro-Zionist statement.
They're part of
whatsoever.
The government, for heaven's sake. They sit in the government, for heaven's sake.
They sit in the government because they looked at it, and I think I had that argument with you.
They're the ministers of the government.
As joining the the time in Poland as joining any, as in, throughout the Gaulas, there were people in, like the Barbanel was part of the Spanish government. So they looked at it as a Goetia, a Picardish government, that you got to be into it to fight it. That's it.
They're not fighting it. They're not looking for its downfall. They're taking. There's the Minister of Health. That's not fighting it.
Yeah. First of all, becoming ministers of health and going into the coalition. This happened just in the later years. The original Gdoila Gide, after the war, they were very very much so that even they go they send in
an
in the Knesset.
50 years they're part of it.
Just to fight for the rights of the Haredim. Unfortunately, what happened, and this is what the Sat Maruf was yelling and screaming, that this is going to end up, that you're going to become part and one and the same. And this is unfortunately what's happening in front of our eyes. But to quote anybody that they became pro-nationalist, and this is why none of them had such an idea to send a boy, even a schwache boy, even a scum of the derech into the army.
So Rabbi Lefkowitz, we're going to bring many witnesses on who've heard from Rav Steinman to go to Nachal Haredi. We'll have, let's say, we need two. We'll bring Adim, who heard it from him firsthand. Ish mi pi ish. How would you respond to that?
If I would respond, if regardless of it's Rav Steinman or anybody, who is, since the IDS is nationalism is minus, it's an avodah zara b'shittas. So to put in a boy into such a matzav, I wouldn't believe that a gudu b'Yisrael, true gudu b'Yisrael, should give such a psak. Like,
okay.
It's just the other way around. Even if you say that there is a possibility to get a boy in there, it would be more of a boy who is a staunch Jewish royal, a staunch Ovid Hashem, a gewaldige, he's stark. But to take a shvacha bocher, litchus is whoever nachar hanoif, to put him in an environment, which the whole environment is dias kazvis, and avoy dezora b'shittes, the way Rabbi Chanan quotes it, I wouldn't accept it. I wouldn't
accept
the such.
So you believe Zionism is avoy dezora?
It's worse than avoy dezora. It's a picarsis. It's meaning.
Okay, so let me ask you a question, because you're a Satmar Talmud, and I asked you this before, but I didn't get a response. The Satmar Rebbe escaped Europe on a Zionist passport, on a Zionist train. Are you allowed to be nene me'atzei asherah for refuah? If somebody's going to die and they say, use avodah zarah to die, or you'll die, what's the halacha? Mavur and Rambam? And hilchas avodah zarah, you chayv misa. Even ba'inis, ba'atzei asherah, right? In perik dalet of avodah zarah. How was he, if he believed it was avodah zarah, how is he allowed to escape? Unless you say he was over Chas v'Shalom Achayvik Nisaskil, which I don't believe. So what I mean, let me make my point. My point is he clearly felt it was not Avodah Zarah, because you're not allowed to be Nisrapa Ba'atzei Asherah. I think I'm being, it's a pircha, Mineu Bey. He couldn't have believed it's Avodah Zarah. I will not accept that the Satmar Rebbe was Nena Me'atzei Asherah, was Nisrapa Me'atzei Asherah.
In other words, what you're saying, the Satmar Rebbe wrote a cipher of Yol Moish, and by the way, I forgot to mention that on that same blog, there is an article of a picture of the cipher of Yoel Moshe with Rav Steinman's name and signature on it that I bought a few years ago before the election, studying the Yoel Moshe.
I have it too.
Okay. So in other words, what you're saying is, you're telling me like this, that Tzatmarov was the age of 70 or 80 when he wrote the Yoel Moshe. He had no extra minute to his life. He wrote a cipher as thick as above a Batra Gemura. The whole cipher is based upon that it's minus and tionis and avodah zarah and whatnot, going on and on and on and on in many of his swarim and his drushes. And he himself was hypocritical, as he didn't believe what he wrote, and therefore he couldn't care less to being rescued through the Zion. This is what you're arguing. But let me finish.
Yeah, okay. Well,
I think you forgot.
Okay.
I had that argument with you before at
okay.
a previous count. I have been on your line.
Right.
And it's documented, and we can make a whole topic on this on its own. That this train that the Sat Maruf was sitting on from Belgium going to Switzerland although the Zionists may claim that this was their train, it's just the other way around. This train has been funded by an office in Nevada Zula in Budapest, Chaim Roth, and many other activists have been involved in it. They subsidize the money for the train, but since those Zionists, whoever Kastner and his buddies were in the leadership, they jumped on the bandwagon of a train that has been paid by non-Zionist, anti-Zionist Jews. In other words, it's not the Zionists who saved the Satmaruf. It's unfortunately that the Satmaruf and the people who supported the train saved the Zionists that got onto this train.
So let's continue this thought, okay? It's called the Kastner train. Even those who say he gave money don't deny that Kastner was the one who did all the negotiations with the Nazis, even the guy who wrote the book that you discussed, right? So I want to ask you a question. If I own an Atzei Asherah, somebody owns an Atzei Asherah, a Father Peter owns an Atzei Asherah, and a few Jews come and they chip in to help pay for the Atzei Asherah, are you allowed to be Nisrapa with an Atzei Asherah?
First of all,
let me tell you my solution. Your solution is that he was Nisrapa with an Atzei Asherah because he chipped in. And my answer is that when he writes his Avodah Zarah, he doesn't mean it's Avodah Zarah. He's using it as a mushel of something that's dangerous, that could lead to bad areas. If it was an Avodah Zarah, they wouldn't be allowed to. Let me ask you, in Eretz Yisrael today, you learned in Brisk. Did you use the buses? Did you go to the doctor? When all the people, all the Naturi Karta or the Eidach Redis, they give birth, they go to Shari Chesed or Shari Tzedek or to one of those hospitals there, right? How do they do that? They're being Nenem Avodah Zarah, according to you. The answer is it's a Maratis. How could it be Avodah Zarah? They would all be Chayiv Misa. It means it's a mashal for a bad thing. Otherwise, it would be Asa.
There are different rules and regulations, and therefore, the Satmaruv, which he is the one who wrote Hilchas Avodah Zarah for this generation, and if he believed so, that, and he's talking about in his Ma'amar Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, he says it's the other way around, that when you build anti-Zionist institutions today in Israel that don't take part in the Bechiras and they don't take part in the voting system, you're building an anti-Zionist movement. It's a Muhammad Avodah Zarah.
Rabbi Lefkowitz, I want to ask you a question. I went through the Bayis Hazman, I went through all the letters from Rabbi Elchanan. Do you think that things could change with time, that maybe, you know, a Republican government could become a Democratic, like here in the United States, we saw yesterday was Obama, who was, you know, the Nishkin Grace Ayyad Eretz Yisrael, super Democrat. Today we have Trump. Do you believe that over time governments can change?
Definitely. Governments can change. Political parties can change.
Philosophies can change.
Cannot change.
Well,
nationalism in Claudius' role is a new phenomenon.
I understand that, but do you believe that the dais of the last government could be different than the dais of the new government?
Definitely.
Okay,
we had an Israeli brigadier
general say that Israel has no interest anymore. Maybe once it was a melting pot. We have no interest. He was saying that Tzahal in general. And we'll ask the Nahal Haredi, he says that they have nothing to do with the rest of the army. Are you a melting pot? Do you believe that things can change?
So in other words, what you're putting up, a hypothetical question.
Right, hypothetical question.
There is not going to be a flag anymore. There's not going to be a Yom HaTzmaut.
I'm not saying it's only going to be just
in terms of security and protection. Period. This is what the Tzahal is going to be all about. And then you're putting up a question how to deal with it.
No, that's not my question. Let me ask the question differently. Rabbi Elchanan writes, when he writes about them, he says they want to be Maharis Torah and Yiddishkeit. Right?
No.
I have the letters in front of me. He says that they want.
I don't know what you're looking at, but
I'll post it online.
It's called Ikvus of the Mashiach. I think he wrote it while you were. Ikvus of the Mashiach is in Yiddish. I have it in print. I can send it for your audience to look at it. And when he's talking about it, he's not talking about Bikri Yiddishkeit. He's talking about the concept of nationalism. He's talking that nationalism per se It's a dire crisis. National sin doesn't have nothing to do with Akiras HaTorah. You could be a Haraiti Shomer Torah mitzvah going in mikveh three times a day and
define
still be a nationalist.
Define nationalism.
Nationalism means identity by a flag, by a nation. Jews have no nationalism. Jews have.
We had the Golem in the Midbar. Wait, we had the Golem in the Midbar. We had flags in the Midbar.
The flags in the Midbar was we don't understand what it was all about, but there was no. We had a Malchus by David. We had Malchus.
Before Malchus,
we had a Malchus, and that's it. Period. Once we were having exile, we never identified ourselves as a nationhood, as being part of an imma by no imma, as it says in Megillas Atzmaut. We're not a nation between nations. We have a Torah and mitzvahs. We're the same Jew in Jerusalem, the same Jew in Melbourne, Australia, the same Jew in Manchester, England. We have the same concept, the same feeling, the same theory. Svarti, Haredi, Ashkenazi, Yeshivish, Litvish, regardless.
Right.
So we have no national identity.
But what you just said is a national identity.
No,
you said we're the same Jew in England.
Yeah,
that's a national identity.
It's an identity that we're Am Yisrael. Am
Lekayanko. What does Am mean? What does the word Am mean? Could you just define, what does Am mean in English? Translate Am. Am means a nation. Am Yisrael. The nation of Klal Yisrael. Isn't that nationalism?
You know what? It was a saying of Sat Maruch. How do you say Erlich Arid in Hebrew? There is an Am in English. There is an English expression of an Am, of a nation. And there is a Yiddish and a Shumatik, a spiritual expression of a nation. They may be used with the same word, the same phrase, the same terminology, with a totally different meaning. By a Goy, and by the Tzionim that said, Kechol HaGoyim by Yisrael, it's a nation between nations. We are like the Swiss, we are like the French, like the Portuguese.
So we
have no identity except that we are Zera, Avrom, Yitzchak, Yankov.
So if that would change, Rabbi Lefkowitz, do you believe that it could change, that we could have a nation that says, Am Yisrael, that says we want to live in Eretz Yisrael, and we want to have a flag, and we want to protect ourselves, and we believe in the Bayri Olam, right? We say the Ani Mamans every day. Is that something that you believe could, if that would happen, would you be okay with it?
It cannot happen. It's like saying the Yidden who followed Yoshke, Jesus.
Why can't it happen? What's Kozevitz about it? Which part of it?
The part of it, national identity. National identity.
Am Yisrael, the nation of Klal Yisrael.
No, Am Yisrael.
Kahala, that's a nation
with a land. We are not defined with a land. We're not defined with a language. We're defined to being people of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's it.
Wait. It says, Leishinu es Leshainam was one of the reasons there was Zaycha to go out of Mitzrayim. What do you mean they're not defined with a language?
But what happened in exile? What was the language? The language throughout ages till Zionism was what? Was Yiddish. What is Yiddish? And when you go into the history with Yiddish is not a language. Yiddish is a godless language. It picked up words.
But how could you say we're not defined by a language then? How could you say we're not defined by a language?
Then it means Lashon Ivri, whatever the language was. And in today's time, what it means is the Yiddish language. Yes, unfortunately,
Are they not part of Klal Yisrael?
No. The Sfardim happens to be that till they came to Israel, they spoke Ladino, which was not true Lashon Kodesh. It was a mixed-up language. No, but what happened was that when ended up in Israel, and this is one of the reasons they created Sfas Ivri, the Hebrew language, was part of the melting pot to identify all Jews in terms of a language as a nationhood. And the whole language came of Apikorsen, the idea that we are identified by a language.
Do you believe that we could have a government that believes in the Rabbeinu Shalom, that believes that the Ikka Mitzvah in the Torah, it says, Kol Adar B'chutz La'aretz K'misha Eilei Aleika, that the Ikka Mitzvah in the Torah is Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, that the language is Shalosh Shinu Es L'Shainim. Do you believe that if such a thing would happen, that you could join it?
If it's in the form of a government and they believe so, it's like believing that the lilav is not a lilav, but
why?
The lilav
why
is
that? Where does it say in Shulchan Aruch that you can't have a government?
There's no such thing as a Yiddish government for Am Yisrael, the Eretz Yisrael, as Managulis. And there's
why
no
not?
God will be Yisrael ever said so.
But why not?
Because it's the hepher of the idea of Golus. And if you want to study it more diligently, there's a cipher Netzach Yisroel from the Maralmi Prague on the whole concept of Golus. There's Perik after Perik after
saying,
Perik.
Because philosophically...
It's what the exile state of Klal Yisroel is. So what Yisroel designed the plan for us? How do we know what a Jew is all about? Who says Hanukkah? Who says anything? We have a Torah, we have a Masoret,
right.
We have a definition that we makabel the Erechadot. So now you say that maybe there's going to come a time in this generation that we're going to redefine or reform Judaism in the form of a chema, of a chalaita state. It could happen, and it's happening.
But Rabbi Lefkowitz, respectfully, Rabbi Lefkowitz, we live by the Shulchan Aruch. We're not Yidden before Matan Torah, right? It doesn't say in the Shulchan Aruch that you can't have a government. Any place. And I learned Dalet Chalkei Shulchan Aruch. It doesn't say any place you can't have a government. It even the Gimel Shuas are not brought by anybody Lahalacha. It doesn't. Yes, the Golus represents the way Klal Yisrael lived for a few thousand years. The Golus is a klala. So if the Rabbeinu Shalom Barayv Tuvav wants to take away a little bit of the bite of Golus, it doesn't say any place in the Shulchan Aruch you can't have a government if the government is all pi halacha.
You know, there's a very sharp reward from the Brisk Ruv. Not to take it literally, just to take the concept off of it. And he said like this, that the Shulchan Aruch is designed for Gaira Midbal Achiva. We don't need to look in Shulchan Aruch, we have Masoret Ovis. But
I don't believe that. I spent my whole life living by the Shulchan Aruch. I don't
understand. I just want to explain what the Brisk Ruv is saying. He's saying like this, Shulchan Aruch is piske halacha, 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 what
right.
To do and not to do. There are things, the same way the Ani doesn't also change status of Shulchan Aruch. To go with a yarmulke, you could get away without going with a yarmulke, but there's a mahut, which goal has been turned in from generation to generation, from father to son, from Rebbe to Talmud, doer achar doer achar doer achar doer. Until today's date, which is Hanukkah Tuf Shin Ayeches, we have no real Godel B'Yisroel except of the pro-Zionist camp of Rav Kook and his followers that has designed a Haredish Medina should be part of Klal Yisroel. And you're asking a hypothetical question. If there is going to stand up a new generation, God forbid it could happen, movements happen, and as the way it looks right now, we are heading into, unfortunately, into this direction that the Medina is becoming firm by the day. And very possibly so that we're going to end up with a Haredish Rosh Mamshula and a Haredish Mafaked and maybe even Rosh Hashivas in the military.
And what would
but
you do then?
This is not going to change the essence of Zionism and the essence of a state. It is what it is.
You're saying that Zionism has become something that is unchangeable, immovable. It's basically become Gzeiras HaKosov of Zionism, and it cannot change forever.
It's not Gzeiras HaKosov. It is what it is. You cannot change. Can you make a Jewish Christianity? There are Judeo-Christians. Can you make Jewish Islam? You cannot do it. Islam is Islam. Christianity is Christianity. Zionism is Zionism. This is what it was held by all Gedolei Yisrael up until today. The only question is what Rav Steinemann held. I don't know. I'm just quoting his letter, and you may bring up someone else who says that he was pro-Zionist, but this is not something that I'm going to argue with, what he held.
Okay.
But as far as we know, there is no God will be Israel. There is no Rebbe, no Rosh Yeshiva, no Mashpia to this day in Yehadis Achraides, Orthodox Judaism, who is pro-Zionist. I don't know anyone.
I know, I weren't in the Mir Yeshiva at Chaim Shmulevitz, just my Rosh Yeshiva was very pro-Zionist.
Chas v'Shalom.
Okay. The part of Ezra Rav was pro-Zionist. All the most of the Gedolim who joined our good that were pro-Zionist. And let me tell you, they held that there are very bad things about Zionism and that there are many kaifrim there, right? But like Yaakov Avinu saw.
Let me finish.
They felt that the Yiddish state is a wonderful thing for Klal Yisrael, for the survival of, that you didn't have to have a place to go. But let me say, in the beginning, let me finish with this thing. In the beginning, Yaakov Avinu, who was Titan Emes LeYaakov, thought that Emes is black and white. And like the Dari writes and the Zohar writes, he spent 14 years in the house of Lavan, or 7 years, making Akudim, Nekudim, Ubrudim, understanding that there's good and there's bad mixed up all over. There are good people who do bad things. There are bad people who do good things. There's nobody I know who's Kulei Taiv. Satma, which does a lot of chesed, also has, sadly, a big fry issue with kids going off the derech. The best yeshivas have problems. The worst yeshivas have erlicha people. Akudim, nekudim, nekudim. It's not black and white. A mature emes realizes there are different colors. So they recognize that, yes, there are real issues with Zionism. On the other hand, post-Holocaust, a Jew needs a place to go. And therefore, when there were wars, Reb Chaim Shmulevitz used to open up Daran Kodesh when I was in yeshiva, and he would stand there crying with his head being mispal for the soldiers who were protecting, who according to Halacha have a din of doing a Mulchemes Mitzvah, which the Bach brings, Halacha is even Bezman Hazeh. So I think, yes, that there are good things and there are bad things, and the Gedolim that I knew, which included the Stipler, who I personally knew, and Rav Shach, and Rav Shlomo Zalman, who said, it's in writing, he said, if you want to go be mispal by a soldier who died al Kiddush Hashem, and Rav Chaim, they did not, and these are people I knew personally, this is not Ishmi Piyish, I could say Adis myself.
Listen, I didn't know them because I was not in me, but if that's the case, I have a big kashet, Rav Chaim Shmulevitz and whoever you mentioned.
Yeah.
Why didn't they, if it's such a holy mitzvah of the land and everything, why didn't they send their own yeshiva boys, not with all kinds of excuses because of the deris, just join the military to do this holy mitzvah? There's a lot of Shabbos. Listen, Shabbos is Shishin Kofches by Hilchas Refuah, but the Kiyach Nefesh, it says mitzvah, but Gedolim, when there is a time of the Kiyach Nefesh, the Gedolim Yisroel should do it. So according to you, Reb Chaim Shmulevitz should have joined the military, he should have been the mafaked, and the boys should be the soldiers.
And if you ask the Gedolim today, including Rav Steinman's closest person, right, he's been on our program, from Yad Aaron, Rav Zolti's son-in-law, he would say that it's true that the soldiers are doing a holy thing, but there's no holier thing than Limud HaTorah. That's what he would respond.
There's no holier thing, no. And Shulchan Aruch says otherwise, that in Shas HaSkana, mitzvah to Gedolim, the Gedolim Yisroel, Yait HaChos in the Cheder, V'chalom
HaChepot. Right, that's not in Shulchan
Shabbos.
It's in Saitim and Test the Gemara you're quoting. So if you ask them, they will explain to you why, that even, which is a discussion, even if it's Kala Mechupasa, why Ben Taira doesn't go out. But we've had him on the program. He said they do wonderful things.
Why isn't there any letter from any Rosh Hashiva that someone is not a Ben Taira should do this holy mitzvah? Like joining the Hatzolah, like joining Chavayim, should do the whole mitzvah, serving in the military. Let them write it openly. Why are they hiding and they're just saying, Ish me, Pish?
I'll tell you why. I think that the reason is when Rav Steinman came out and they said he was pro, you'll hear David Hager says that he was pro the Nachal Haredi, they hung up Pashkevillim about him. There was a Pashkevill going around today in Eretz Yisrael, I saw it online, calling him a Russia for backing Nachal Haredi. The Ar Sameach already in, I'm guessing, I have the letter, it's like in 1910 or 1915 when he was, no, I'm sorry, it was post-Balfour Declaration. He writes that even if you're choshish for the Gimel Shavuos, now that you have the consent of the Umas Olam, of the UN, or it was pre-UN, it was Balfour, he says, Baruch Hashem, the Gimel Shavuos are not Negei anymore.
Okay, I know. He's quoting Sar Pachad HaShviyah. This is what he's saying.
Yeah, exactly. And you would agree that You would agree he was a god Ladar, no? He was,
but happened to
wanted to get Haskama from him on
that. But it happens to be that now he was now that we know what the Balfour Declaration was all about, he was talking about history was happening, and especially today, you see what is happening right now in front of our eyes, that President Donald Trump announced Jerusalem as the capital of the Jewish state, and all the entire European Union and all Islamic nations and the UN, everybody condemned it. So it's not black and white that all Emesoelim agreed as such as a Jewish state and Jerusalem as its capital. It's not pashut whatsoever.
And if
the Arsamaya would have been today, he would revise this psak because the psak is based on fact. And the fact of today is that the consensus of the Emesoelim is totally different.
Well, I'm happy to hear that you disagree with Dar Sameach.
No. I'm not saying I disagree. I'm just saying that disagree. There's just some is basing his talk on the fact, and the fact is a little different.
Rabbi Lefkowitz, it's always enjoyable having you on. Have a wonderful
Thanks for giving me the opportunity.
Very good. Call to bye-bye.
We have on the phone with us from the neighborhood of Ashdod, Rabbi Karmi Gross. He's Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva's Derech Chaim, Eretz Yisrael's first Haredi Hesdi Yeshiva. I'm not even going to try to explain that to you. These are very nuanced words, so I'm going to welcome Rabbi Karmi, and Rabbi Karmi will explain this. Welcome, Rabbi Karmi.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, Rabbi Karmi, could you explain to Americans what it means, the first Haredi Hesdi Yeshiva? Many of us don't know what a Hesdi Yeshiva is,
yeah.
And a Haredi Hesdi Yeshiva, we certainly don't know, so if you could explain it.
Okay, yeah, it's all quite new, even though we're in our fifth year now, Baruch Hashem. The idea about a Haredi Hesdi Yeshiva is that there are quite a number of boys who are in the Haredi, which I guess you listeners do know what that is, the ultra-Orthodox world. So boys who find themselves, let's say, the hat and jacket type of boy, black kippah, black and white dress, more or less. And these are boys who have looked at the option of being a full-time learner, which, as you know, in Eretz Yisrael, until now has been pretty much their only option, to go into yeshiva and then on to being an avreich. And there are many boys who've come to the realization that that's not really for them. In other words, these are boys who are still interested in learning, they're still interested in growing as a Talmid Chacham, but at the same time, these are boys who also want to be able to earn a degree and want to be able to find a good parnasa, to be able to finance their families. They look at the rampant poverty in the Haredi world. It's not something they want either. But more of it is really around, I think, the fact that just being an avrech, sitting in a yeshiva for the rest of their life, is not something that really speaks to them. And at the same time, these boys also realize that as is the case in Eretz Yisrael, that if you're going to get a job, you're going to be in Fayez Mishpacha, you're not going to be serving your country in the Kosle Beis HaMedrash, then you have to serve in the army. And also to create a way for all that to come together, to be able to, number one, be able to sit and learn seriously, number two, to be able to take college credits, academic credits here towards building a degree, and at the same time being able to at some point serve in the army in a significant way, but also everything within a Haredi, in a protected environment, let's say. And so we put together a program in yeshiva here, and that's what Haredi Hezder means. Haredi means, as we said, the type of boys. And Hezder are boys who do army service. Now, until now, the only army service that religious boys did was the Dati Lumi, the regular Hezdi yeshivas, which many have heard of. And those yeshivas are only learning and army. They do not do any type of academic classes. And it's a five-year program usually, and that's the regular Hezder. Part of the time they're in the army, they're all in combat units, and part of the time in yeshiva. That wasn't going to work for a Haredi boy. So around 7 years ago, we began the process within the Knesset, members of Knesset, Defense Ministry, the IDF, who very much want Haredim to join the army and even more so the workforce. And we set up our own Hezder. Hezder simply means an agreement, like a Sidur. That's what Hezder means. And it's an agreement between us and the army, and they have a special agreement for Haredi boys. And just very quickly, what the boys do by us is it's a four-year program. The first 2 years, they learn two Sdarim here in Yeshiva. At night, they learn for a towards a degree in computer sciences. We have the computer classes and the accredited classes are found on our campus. And after 2 years, they're drafted into the Army into technology units. And in those technology units, they work in the Army in these units for 2 years. They work there, basically flip their day from 9 to 5 or 9 to 6. They're in the Army in the technology units. And at night, they're able to come back to the yeshiva and learn a night seder. So even when they're in the Army, they're in a much more protected environment. They don't stay on bases. There's no overnight in bases. It's not totally protected, but it's a very viable solution. And so the boys, after those 4 years, have learned for 4 years. They've, Baruch Hashem, grown in Torah. And at the same time, they've worked significantly towards a degree. And plus, they've done their Army service, in which they've served the country and also gained valuable work experience at the same time. So we call it a win-win. That's pretty much the program.
Has there been opposition to you?
Blei Ayin Hara, if I had a piece of wood in front of me, I would knock on it. I don't know if you're supposed to do that. Blei Ayin Hara, no. There has been opposition. And I think it's because we don't claim to be the answer for the Haredi world. The Haredi world, Baruch Hashem, does great, and we do not claim to be that even boys who are learning seriously should come to our yeshiva. We want boys who are in yeshiva and learning yeshiva. Baruch Hashem, Israel needs them. We're talking about boys who like I said before, who have realized that's not going to be their path. Again, they're not off. We don't deal with boys who are off the deck. We don't deal with boys who can't learn. We don't deal, quite the opposite. The boys actually learning more by us. We're dealing with boys. If they were in a regular yeshiva, they'd be learning a couple hours here, coming late for davening, not really taking it seriously. But they still want to learn. They still want to be part of yeshiva. So the fact that we don't recruit from yeshiva, we don't go into yeshivas, it's not our style. Boys who want us, find us.
And how are you different from Hezder?
We're not a combat. Boys for us don't go into combat units. At Hezder Yeshiva, the boys, they will go into regular combat units. And in those combat units, you'll find, they'll be exposed. They have to stay overnight in there. They have to stay, they're on the base all the time in a day and night, Shabbos, everything. And they're exposed to to the regular community in a very, very significant way. And that even though there are now some, like the Nachal Haredi, there's Givati Haredi, there's even San Chanim Haredi, the paratroopers have a Haredi unit, but still those really aren't for the boys that we're talking about. We're talking about boys who really want to learn. And the regular, the Dati Lumi has there, is around 2.5 years in the Army, like I said, in regular combat units, and 2.5 years in the yeshiva.
So this is sort of
like
white collar.
That model doesn't work.
This would be a white collar Hezder in the respect that they don't go to combat, but they spend time in offices, I guess, doing some type of electrical engineering.
Well, there's computer programming, cyber stuff, cyber defense, cyber attack.
So,
depends how good they are, but it's pretty high level stuff.
So this was formed because of the fact that the Nachal Haredi actually do see combat. That is the difference.
Yeah, the Nachal Haredi, or like all the Givati Haredi, the others, are meant for boys who have finished their learning careers. They have decided they don't want to learn anymore, or maybe a half hour, an hour a day. We're talking about boys who want to learn.
Rabbi Gross, what is your opinion of Nachal Haredi?
I think Nachal Haredi does an excellent job. It's like anything in the world. There are some boys who it's a fantastic, life-changing, life-altering, who go in there very, very shaky and come out really just fantastic people. And you'll find, boys who aren't successful there, like everything else in the world. It runs on a different model than we use. The model that we're using is a model that believes that we should prepare the boys for the Army, prepare them for work afterwards. So, the Nachal Haredi will make sure that all the years in the Army, They'll never be together with women, and there are no females anywhere near them. Our shita is a little different because we know we're preparing them for the workforce.
Now, do you understand, it's hard for, Rabbi Karmi, from us for a distance, it's hard to understand.
Yeah.
Do you understand, like, the rabid hate and opposition to Nahal Haredi, which, from the way you describe it, is it seems to be basically a kosher army for religious boys. What is the absolute, you know, they're, when they come to neighborhoods, they're beaten up, there's videos. What is that rabid anger about?
Well, you know, it's like any type of people who are, I guess, sort of racist, and that people look on the outside and don't look on the inside. You know, the boys who you get the rabid opposition to are not necessarily Nachal Haredi boys. It could be any Haredi person who is in the army. They could be in 30 or 40 different units. Nachal Haredi is just one of the different places where a Haredi boy might go. So any Haredi soldier, if he walks into a Haredi neighborhood, not all, depends where, will get that type of opposition. And by the way, it should be very, very clear that there are very few places that a Haredi soldier will walk into that he will get that type of opposition. You're talking about maybe one neighborhood in Beit Shemesh, maybe Me'ah Sharim. So you're talking about maybe two places in the country, maybe some places in Bnei Brak. So, you know, it's like America. You can't walk into every neighborhood. So, yeah, and why is there such in those places? And again, that's not the majority. They just get a lot of press and they make a lot of noise. In most places, I would say 70% of the Haredi neighborhoods in the country, a Haredi soldier could walk in uniform with a kippah, and he'll be honored. So it's just like everything. It's just the way the press likes to. You know, no one's interested in, you know, giving the other stories. I can tell you stories of our soldiers who are, you know, Mekadesh Shem Shemayim in the army, and they go to neighborhoods and people, you know, pat them on the back. So you should just know, and the listeners should know, that most of the Haredi world does accept Haredi soldiers with open arms. Now, the places that do not is there's a fear of the unknown. There's a fear that their children will see these soldiers, and their children will come to realize that, you know what, we really have to give back. You know, how are these guys, you know, giving their lives and being moser nefesh for the country, and what are we doing? Now, and it's an answer, that's a question that needs an answer. I think there are answers, people who learn seriously, people who dedicate their lives to Torah. I think everyone agrees that's a beautiful thing, and that's a sacrifice that's more than worthy. But it's a question that many people don't want their children to look at. They just don't want their children to know such a thing exists, because they'll see that soldier and they'll say, hey, you know, that's a beautiful thing. Why shouldn't I be like that? And they just don't want to explain that to their children. And then they think, I think wrongly so, that they can protect them and then, you know, create a bubble. And we all know that doesn't work. But that's the anger.
Rabbi Karmi, what percentage of the boys who go to yeshiva go through the program and come out irreligious, markedly less religious than when they went in?
Which program are you referring to?
I'm talking to you, your program in your yeshiva.
My program, we have approximately now 100 boys in the yeshiva, around 50 in the first 2 years, and another 50 right in the army. So I'll speak about the 50 in the army, and we already have our first group leaving the army now, coming out of the army. And looking at the 50 who came out of the army, how many of them went up, how many stayed the same, and how many went down? So I would say that at least 50% of them became stronger even through their army service, because they keep on learning, they're in the yeshiva. I would say another 45% have become pretty much the way they were, and almost nobody, maybe 5%, I wouldn't even say so, have fallen. Because our whole philosophy here in the yeshiva is to prepare them for the army. We have in yeshiva here, we run our day a little differently. You know, they learn here from 7:30 in the morning till 6 o'clock at night. It's all Kodesh in the yeshiva. All the Limudei Chol is in the evening hours. But even so, we have like 45 minutes a day, which is a hashkafa shir, a philosophy shir. So our boys, when they go into the army, they go in and they're well versed into what they're going to see there, and what they're going to be approached with. The major issue in the army, many people think, is, you know, if we take care of the problems, they won't be with women in the army. The Kohed is the major problem. That is not the major problem of the Haredi. The major problem of a Haredi going into the army is when he has that mifgash, that meeting with the chiloni, with the non-religious, and all of a sudden they come to see that these non-religious boys are nice guys, and the guys who have some values. They're not our values necessarily. They're not as strong as ours, but they're not bad people. And then they get asked all these questions about their own emunah, about their own religion, and they've never been taught the answers. You know, something I think that goes on everywhere, like on the college campuses. But if you prepare the student beforehand, as we do here in the yeshiva, and they know why they're going into the army, no one falls. And I'd just like to add another very, very important point is that they go into the army with a sense of mission, and their mission is to be Mekadesh Shem Shamayim. And we've had it. We've had literally just incredible stories of boys who are the Kaddish Shem Shemayim in the army. And they know that's why they're going in. When a boy goes in with a sense of mission, not as a lost boy, you know, cut off from his yeshiva, cut off from his community, but quite the opposite. He goes in as a yeshiva bacher, and he remains a yeshiva bacher in the army. And he's prepared, and he walks in with a sense of mission. We've had no fallout. We have no one who's gone down.
That's an amazing statistic. I think that there are many yeshivas who can't say that in the yeshiva. What would you say about Nahal Haredi? What type of fallout do they have? And I don't know if you have any knowledge about it, but since we're on the topic, I thought I'd extend it.
The Nahal, again, is a unit in the army. And, you know, very much depends on the boy who goes in. If a boy goes into the army with a strong boy who simply wants to do some sort of service, even the combat service, and they walk in a strong boy with strong family, strong connection to their Yiddish guy, those boys rarely ever fall. A lot of the stories you hear when they point to it are boys who walk into the army and they already have, you know, nine toes out of religion. And the army just gives them that makabah patish, if you will, you know, to give them the situation. I'll give you one quick story. You asked me the percentage. I said 5%. We had one boy who was in the yeshiva here just really for a month or two, and he went to the army afterwards, and a Rebbe saw him later in the army and asked him. His name was Yonatan. He said, "Yonatan, you're not from anymore. You're not religious." And he says, "Harav," he says, "I haven't been religious since I was 15. So that's a boy who was in the yeshivas. He was hanging out. He already had lost it. He was just hanging on. And when he went into the army, he had an excuse to take off his kippah because no one cared at that point. But he hadn't been religious already for a long time, which is probably why he only lasted a month or two here. But Baruch Hashem, like I said, boys going to Nachal Haredi, if it's a good boy, going in as a good boy, Nachal Haredi is not what is going to make the boy not from. And the army is not what's going to make him not from. If he's prepared correctly, knows what he's going into, I think he'll be okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you, Rabbi Karmi, do you believe that going to the army is today a Mohammed's mitzvah?
Mohammed's mitzvah is a halacha hagdara, which I'd rather not get into. I don't know the sugi well enough. But if you would ask me, do I think that going into the army is a religious obligation, I would say I do not know. If you would ask me if going into the army is a moral obligation, I would say yes. In other words,
when you're not sure about the halacha, which part of the halacha
what's considered a mechemes mitzvah? When at one point is a mechemes mitzvah?
Well,
so I'd rather not go into
to defend Israel. To defend Israel, mitzara ba'aleha. So the question is, do you consider Israel today the matzara ba'aleha?
I can't imagine why not. I can't imagine why not. It seems fairly obvious that is the situation. That is, it is a mechemes mitzvah. These boys are going to the army, are protecting. And by the way, that's true of our boys who are doing the computers and who are doing the, you know, the development of whether it's cyber defense or whether they're doing. Baruch Hashem, I have a son in one of the units. I don't know if I'm supposed to talk about it, but he tells me that the work he's doing is saving lives. So
I'll tell
it's
you,
hard
Rabbi
to hear
Karmi,
that
I'll
would
you,
not be.
a good reason why to be Isaac in this mitzvah, Isaac in the halacha, is that the Shulchan Aruch paskins in Aruch Chaim, that in Samuel Beis, I think it is, that we paskin that by a mitzvah daraisa, mitzvah sriches kavana. So if going to the army, a boy goes because it's a moral obligation, no, he's not makayim mitzvah. He could spend 2 years not being makayim the mitzvah. If he, on the other hand, he says it's mitzvah sriches kavana, and I know it's a molchemes mitzvah, every day of the 2 years he's makayim a mitzvah, every minute he's makayim a mitzvah.
Well, I would just disagree with you and respectfully and say that a moral obligation is also a mitzvah. So whether it's mechemes mitzvah or it's a mitzvah because you have a moral obligation that if others, you can't have others, hachechem yochul mechama v'atem teshvu po, right, then that's another type of obligation. And I think that's an important one. And in some ways, I think it may even be more important than just, you know, the idea of that, you know, it's a mechemes mitzvah. But realize that you're serving Klal Yisrael, and I do believe that obligation, that moral obligation to serve Klal Yisrael, is one of the ultimate obligations. I don't think necessarily serving the army is the only way to discharge that obligation, but that obligation to serve Klal Yisrael is, in my mind, paramount. And of course, a boy does that by going to the army, and I think most people, even you hear it from members of Knesset, Charei members of Knesset, that if a boy is not learning seriously, really putting in that time, and you know, then he should be in the army. And very few people disagree with that. Bapoel, it doesn't work out that way, but that's, you know, in actuality. But in philosophy, I think that almost everybody would agree that if a boy is not seriously learning, and most of us know what those percentages are, then he should be serving in the army. He should be doing some type of service. There's a difficulty. How do you send a boy who is sheltered? How do you send him into the army? How do you send him into that environment? And for that is what we're providing answers. We're providing solutions to that problem. How do you take a boy and who, like I said, sheltered in yeshiva, and how do you prepare him so that the army becomes an experience in Kiddush Hashem, not an experience in losing his Yiddishkeit? That's where we step in, and that's what we're doing.
So how do you teach your boys to respond when they bump into their first Israeli irreligious who says, you know, you guys, you're dinosaurs. You know, the whole world has accepted that Darwinism, survival of the fittest, you know, there's you know, it's 99.9% of scientists, the one who make your antibiotics, the one who make your iPhones, the one who are creating the guns. How do you arm a child to respond to this person?
Well, again, that's a very, very long discussion. And Baruch Hashem, we have rebbes here who are more expert in those areas than I am. But the answer to many of those things is that the conflicts between definitive science, and the Torah's values, or even the Torah's stories, are really very, very far and few in between. And there are many, many books out there today which do argue that argument, and argue it, I think, quite convincingly. I think quite the opposite, that it's something that I do spend a lot of time with, because my own degree is in moral education and moral philosophy, is that actually, philosophically and even scientifically, much of how we believe things and how we believe them to be true is scientifically valid. If you just take an example of evolution as you know, the points of evolution that are scientific fact, if you will, if that's not a misnomer in itself, as scientists will say, we don't provide facts, we provide hypotheses. But in it, and saying that there was such an idea of some development of man, there are plenty of Rishonim who could be, you know, who would go with that, and it would say we can accept that. Who says that the Adam HaRishon was not a finished product? And there's, again, it's not something that I'm making up. It's not something Achronim are making up. It's something that's found in the words of the Rambam and other Rishonim. So there are many, many ways of taking things, and if you prepare boys with these, they're not shocked when someone...
When you say the Rambam, which Rambam are you referring to, Rabbi Karmi?
Again, I'd rather not comment. Like I said, we have people know this a lot better than I do. But there are books, and there are, whether it's the challenge of creation, whether it's, different writers, and you find it, who quote Rishonim. Now, you don't have to agree, and I don't agree with many of their conclusions. I think many times some of the more modern writers take things a little too far, but the sources they bring do show this type of reasoning. Ramban, I believe, the Rambam, both talk about it. To get these sources for it, I'd have to get back to you. I don't, like I said before, not my field of expertise.
So I'm just curious, how would a boy respond? My name is, give me a popular Israeli name, Avi, and I'm asked by some guy, he says, you know, you believe in this artifact called religion. Come on, all of science doesn't agree with it. You know, we know the world is billions of years old. Avi, you're a yeshiva boy. Mm-hmm. You know, stop the Gemara and then let's go out to the bar tonight because it's all, you know, you don't believe in science. What would be your response? You're Avi.
So the response is our boys are asked, we ask those boys the question, we bring it up in yeshiva.
So
and we talk about it, and
how would you respond?
So again, the response is more or less like I told you. Yeah, like I told you before, that there's nothing in religion that says that the age of the universe is a problem. The Torah is not a history book, and the Torah talks about the history of man, meaning the history of man from which we learn lessons. We learn moral lessons. The Torah is not a history book, and we know that. And so the fact that there could have been man, or there could have been a universe, or taking Gerald Schroeder's Genesis and the Big Bang, there's nothing there whatsoever that doesn't say that the universe cannot be 350 billion years old. The Shesha Shmei Breishis are, we don't know how long each day is, and how long, and you know, Schroeder's whole concept of that each day at the universe as the universe expanded, which is the Big Bang, which is Zman and Chagiga. There do not have to be necessary conflicts here. And it's crucially important that the boy hears that and learns about it before he's, like you said, before he has that first meeting with the Chiloni boy. And rather, yes, I know that challenge, yes, I have heard it, et cetera. Let me give you some possibilities that may be able to, but there are not things in science that per se do not allow us to be believers.
Do you think that
he can challenge the other boys? I'm sorry. Go ahead,
Rabbi Karmi. Do you believe that regular yeshivists, like the standard Lakewood, Mir, etc., should have a class, sort of like prepping boys for response when they meet, you know, not only the world, but when they meet social media? Here are, you know, some of the obvious responses. Do you think that's something that's neglected?
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
It's a terrible disservice.
Well, Rabbi Karmi,
I'll just give you an example. I had a boy, right, just 5 minutes ago. I was, you know, showing me a Rashi and asked me a question in Rashi and Chumash on the Sedra, and he showed me a Rashi. I said, well, let's look at Rashi's source. He says, what do you mean Rashi's source? Isn't all Rashi Ruach HaKodesh?
I said,
you don't know that every Rashi has a source in Chazal. I mean, even you know, the disservice is across the board. They're not given the truth. And it hurts. It hurts. It hurts them because this is what makes boys fall.
Well, Rabbi Gross, thank you very much. It's, you know, when I was growing up, there was a yeshiva in America called Tarvadas that sort of did the same thing,
yes,
with the exception that they didn't have the army part, but they had the education part, et cetera. And it seems that
my father was from the first Talmidim of Tarvadas and from the closest Talmidim of Rosh Chag HaFaiv Mendelovitz.
Yeah, my wife.
So I know that world well.
Yeah. My wife's grandfather was Reb Shraga Feivel. So
we're related.
Yes. It seems to me that you're a new form of yeshiva that seems to be addressing a real need. And well, thank you very much, Rabbi Gross. It's been an honor to have you on with us. Hatzlacha Rabbah.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Kol tov. Bye-bye.